Yeah, the Rambam and his family had to run when Arabic attitudes, when Muslim attitudes changed. And in the main, I mean, you were a second-class citizen. What's there to talk about? You couldn't ride on a donkey. You're a Jew. You couldn't wear leather if you were a Jew, because you are a hybrid. You're some midpoint. But if you were to take a choice whether you wanted to live as a Sfaradi or an Ashkenazi in the last two millennia, you would definitely want to be a Sfaradi, without question. So we react with the intensity of what indeed we suffered. Can't eat meat? Go to the bottom. 174. Four lines from the bottom. Lo yachal basar v'lo yishteh yayin. That's it. I am skipping just to be able to define our terms. Tono, we learned in a brisa. Avol ochel hu basar meliach. Help me with basar meliach. What is basar meliach?
Salted meat.
What does that mean? Kosher? What is salt? Thank you. What we call today salami, bologna, and smoked meats is what is considered salted meat. It has been preserved. It's not fresh meat. Which would you prefer, a pastrami sandwich or a steak? Don't answer that. Don't answer that. But probably a steak costs more because it is fresh, and a pastrami is, even though it's been processed to be able to save the meat, because it's old meat. Any smoked meat is old meat. I beg some of you, come with me, I'll take you to a factory where, not where they smoke meat, although I can do that also. I'll take you to a factory where they make salami and bologna. Glatkusha! Alright? No one in there drinks anything else but Cholav Yisrael. See the Shishkita, every cow has a gartle around it before it's slaughtered. Okay? I'll take you to the factory. I defy you to say that you'll eat a salami the next time. What falls on the floor goes in. Okay? There's enough salt in there not only to kill your athlete's foot for 120 years, but probably to numb you for life and preserve you as a pillar of salt. And we eat it, and it's delicious, and I love it. You too. We add mustard to it on rye. What could be better? Gan Eden couldn't even be better. In Gan Eden they give you a tuna fish sandwich. They don't give you salami sandwiches. Okay? That's basar meliach. And basar meliach is an inferior meat. A pound of roast beef today costs what as opposed to a pound of salami? It's an inferior meat despite the processing.
We're an inferior generation.
What?
We're
a superior generation. I mean, we are so superior that we can use rationale and reason to understand why it is the inferior is superior. You see. But let's go on. That not only is basar meliach as an inferior meat, avol ochel hu basar meliach. So according to this brisa, it's steak that you can't eat, but basar meliach, which is an inferior meat, as a result of having to be old and therefore needing processing, can be eaten on Erev Tisha B'Av. Bishol said, Yayin Migito. And he drinks Yayin, wine that just came out of his gat. Gat is his vineyard. Not his wine cellar, but his vineyard. Now you know what Yayin Migito actually means? Is the halachic term for?
Grapes juice.
Wine you don't, which has been aged in a barrel, and for which you're waiting for the fermentation to take its course. To take the fruit of the gods and make it into $4 a bottle. Grape juice is not $4 a bottle. Only in America by Kevin is it coming close. Grape juice is like orange juice. It doesn't cost any more to grow grapes than it does to grow oranges. A half a gallon of orange juice is what today? $2 Tropicana premium pack? $201, $199? And grape juice is what? $3.75? Only because of the law of supply and demand. Doesn't cost any more to make grapes. But Kedah knows he's got a captive market. Why not, based on the law of supply and demand, charge whatever you can? That's Yayin Migito, because it's not real wine. It's the preliminary to wine. That can be drunk. Grape juice can be drunk, at least according to this brisa. Asks the Gemara, Dvoso Meliach Ad Kama. What does basar meliach mean? When do you reach basar meliach? Omar Rabchinen about Kahana Mishmei Yishmuel, the answer is Kol Zman She'einu Kishlomi. As long as it is a meat that isn't the kind of meat like the meat of Shlomim, a Korban Shlomim, what do? You eat the entire Korban. Well, you're not going to eat it in one shot. You take the behemoth and you preserve it. And Yayim Migito, as far as the Yayim Migito at Kama, is Kol Zman She'hu Toseis. Toseis means it is bubbling. As long as it continues to bubble, and there's a froth on it, then you know it's juice, and it is not wine yet. That can be thrown. But again, we are machnes. We don't eat salami, and we don't drink grape juice. So last Motzei Shabbos for Kiddush, we didn't have wine, nor did we have grape juice. For Abdullah, we substituted something else.
Beer
or something else.
Why do we
have the air conditioning going on? I think it's getting hot. Well,
why don't we continue with the
chumras?
Even the grape juice.
Yeah.
Which here it says that even Erev is probably going to have the grape juice.
No, what do you mean? Why do we continue?
We should have had grape juice for Abdullah.
Yeah, but we are machmir infinitely more than what the Gemara says, number one. Number two, as far as, you know, the real halacha from a practical point of view, you know, I don't have any beer in my house. I don't think I've had beer in the last 20 years in my house. Surely since I live in Passaic, I don't remember ever having beer in my house. Maybe, I don't know, maybe once someone brought it. And that's 18 years this week. Last Friday was the beginning of the 18th year. And what do? Don't make Abdullah? That's an absurdity. So if I have nothing else but wine, the halacha is surely that you're going to go ahead and you're going to make Abdullah over wine, because Abdullah has Orisa dimensions to it.
Wait.
If I can go ahead and use wine and give it to someone else to drink, and if I don't have someone else to drink, like a Kotan, who doesn't have a Din of Avelus, I can drink it myself, then all the more I can, if I don't have anything else but grape juice, I can certainly use it. Yayin Migito. Okay? But if we're being machmer on all Yayin, you see, you like to play the game in pieces. But I'm not going to let you do that. You want to drink grape juice for Kiddush? You want to drink grape juice for Abdullah? Then the bracha is Borei Pri HaGafen. If it's Borei Pri HaGafen, it is wine. No two ways about it. If it's wine, and we are machmer, we don't drink it for 9 days. Not Erev Tisha B'Av. But Welch's grape soda is no problem. It's artificially flavored, no?
I don't see the appeal.
I don't know.
You can buy that orange cans wine.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Please go back. Let's take a look at another aspect of what brings us here as we round Chatzos. Please go back to line 167, the very beginning of the line, Tonu Rabbonim. Tonu Rabbonim, we learned in another brisa. Kol mitzvos hanoagos be'evel, nohagos, or be'ovel, is nohagos be'tisha b'av. Everything that an ovel, a personal mourner, has got to do in Shiva, is in force on Tisha B'av. What are they? Number one, asur ba'achilo shasiya. Number two, sicha. Number three, nilas asando. Number four, b'tashmish hamita. Number five, asur likros b'torah nevi'im uksulim. Let's explain. The first thing, asur ba'achilo shasiya, you're not allowed to go ahead and eat or drink. Next one, besicha, you're not allowed to cosmetically anoint yourself. Number three, nilas asandol, you're not allowed to wear shoes. Number four, tashmish hamita, you're not allowed to go ahead and maintain sexual relations. Also, and here is where you see my problem today. According to the Gemara, osur likros b'torah nevi'im uksuvim, you're not allowed to learn Tanakh, v'lishnos b'mishnah b'talmud, or learn Mishnah and Gemara, or b'medrash, which is halacha, which is agoda, or b'halachos or agodas, whether it's halacha or agoda, avol, with the following exceptions. Korehu b'makom she'eino ragilikros. You can pick up something that you've never learned before, so you know you're going to break your teeth on it. How do you feel when you don't understand something that you're learning? You read a Rashi, you don't understand it. You read a Mishnah, you don't understand the terminology. You look at a piece of Gemara, it just doesn't make sense to you. It's Greek to you. How do you feel? Good about yourself? There is no human being that doesn't feel frustrated. Damn it, why don't I understand it? Why is he smarter than I? So there is no pleasure in learning that. There is intense grief in learning that. There's frustration in learning that. And you'll soon see what the word frustration means here. The makom she'eino ragil lekros, where you are not used to reading. And v'shoneh b'makom she'eino ragil lishnos. Take a Gemara that you never looked at. Or take a Gemara that you did look at and turn to the last page. See what it says. V'korei b'kinos, you can read and learn the kinos. The Eov, the Sefer of Eov, which is in the Tanakh, but is all a confrontation of grief. Ubi devarim haraim shebi Yirmiyah, take the chapters in the Navi Yirmiyahu where he predicts the Churban, and that you can read. Now it's on the basis of this that we do know that as long as Tisha B'Av is analogous to Avelus, an Ovel, if Chas V'Shalom you are sitting Shiva, okay? You're not allowed to learn Torah. But can you take out a Shulchan Aruch to check the halachas on Avelus? And the answer is yes. Whether you know them or you don't know them, you can sit there and learn all Shiva. You can sit and learn Hilchos Avelus. Now here too, give me a second. Here too, what are we learning if not the halachas of Tisha B'Av and the historical background of Tisha B'Av, so that this piece in time is does fall within the basic categories that are established here. You were saying?
I was about moving around. You said we do on this book what we do with the first one.
Yeah?
Where is no reading?
Oh, that's a shot. Okay? That is a shot. The fact of the matter is that within Avelos there is a concept of tshuva. And if there is a concept of tshuva within Avelus, there's a concept of fasting. So that, at least on the first day, people would go ahead and fast and come home, and they must eat. That's the Seudas Avro. Continue. V'tinoko shabes rabon, the children in yeshiva, for whom you don't call off school, even if the Rebbe is needed to build a Beis HaMikdash, is betelim on Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to hold school with them. Mishum Shenamar, and all of this is as a result of only one thing. All of the restrictions in Torah is because of a pasuk that we say, Shabbos, in Psukei Dezimra, Taras Hashem Tamima, Pikudei Hashem Yeshorim. The mitzvos and the commandments of God are Yeshorim, are straight, and because of that, Mesamche Lev. They are a source of joy. Now you understand that Tisha B'Av, Torah is proscribed. You are limited in Torah, but you are not limited in davening. There are all kinds of things that some say you should leave out of davening. We davened this morning, what did we say? Mizmar l'toda. Haril Hashem kol ha'aretz. Hodu Hashem ki tov, ki lo'am chasto. Sadik Hashem v'chol v'racho. We said the Ashra. Hoseach es yadecho. These are all lofty, romantic kinds of things. And nonetheless, this is not limited and proscribed. The only simcha that is proscribed is the simcha of Torah. Pikudei Hashem Mesamchei Lev. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda adds, Af eino korei b'makom she'eino ragil lekros. No, you're not going to take out a sefer where you haven't studied before. You know why? Because in addition to grief of not understanding it, there is another thing. There is the challenge, the intellectual challenge of trying to understand it. And that challenge, in the end, when you have won, and you do understand the Rashi, you have figured out that Gemara, what is there? There's intense satisfaction and intense joy in being able to understand that. So Rabbi Yehuda probably understands it in a way that is closer to... in the learning of Torah, it is closer to what we people feel. I know I myself at least feel that way. There are times when I don't understand a piece, so I can become extraordinarily depressed. But I become depressed not because I don't understand it, but because I haven't found the tools with which to be able to fathom what's being said, and I go ahead And the challenge is there so that I may even pass up a whole night and not sleep. The Eino Shoneh, says Rabbi Yehuda, b'makom she'eino ragil lishnos, avol korei, but rather, like the others, you read in Eo and in Kios, in Kinos, Devorim Haroim Shabi Yirmiyahu, in the depressing parts of Yirmiyahu, the Tinoko Shabes Rabbon Betelim, and Rabbi Yehuda also agrees that the children shouldn't be in Yeshiva Mishum Shenemar, because it says Pikudei Hashem Yeshorim Mesam Teleik, and that is why the restriction on Torah. And Mike, let me just again, I want to repeat on into this: if Torah was prohibited as a blanket prohibition, we should not, would not have to say the brachos this morning of Birchas Torah. And even if you say, well, wait a minute, but we say Pesukei Dezimra, then we wouldn't say Pesukei Dezimra if it is Aser. And if you say, well, wait a minute, if not Pesukei Dezimra, at least Shema, Shema would be Aser, and anything that has a Pesuk in it would be Aser. But that's not the case. It is only a certain kind of Torah that is being proscribed and prohibited.
Pesukei Dezimra, I know what you're saying, not in the sense of learning it, but rather in the sense of tefillah.
Ah, that's what we call now, we have a new category called Seder Hayom. It has been transformed,
right,
not from a learning experience, from a learning experience, into a devotional, what you call Torah tefillah, reaching out experience. Now, there is an interesting conflict here that occurs because of this. We take the Pesukei Dezimra, which is Torah, and we put on a new veneer, a new coating, a new derech, a new approach, and that's the avodas halev, the emotional response to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rather than the learning, the intellectual response. Good? What are we going to do with Kriya Shema? When we said Kriya Shema this morning, was it a learning experience? A Torah experience? Or was it an emotional outrage?
Combination.
It's a combination. Good. Now what do we do tonight, when we come back to put on tefillin? You know the halacha that says that when you read Kriya Shema, you have to have the tefillin on. Now, we read Kriya Shema this morning, and we didn't have tefillin on. So what do we do tonight? Do we recite Kriya Shema again once we have tefillin on or not? And as you say, it's a machlokas. It depends how you look at the Shema. Is the Shema of davening an outreach, an avodah shebalev, nothing more than a preliminary exercise to the Shemona Esrei, right? Or is the Shema in davening a statement that we have learned Kol HaTorah Kula? You are aware of the fact that in the morning, when you do say Shema, you have summarized the entire Torah. I hope you are aware of it. It was the equivalent of learning Kol HaTorah Kula, because in the Shema is embedded the Aseres HaDibros, and in the Aseres HaDibros is embedded a summary of all Taryag Mitzvos. And that's why you say it. Now, I know you had things to do, because I understand that I, supposedly as a rabbi getting paid for learning, have days when I don't have time to learn. Is Allah haskama makama, you people who are in other spheres of economic endeavor may not have time to even open up a sefer. And probably there are days, however, and this is the paradox, that you do more learning than I do. So at least let me have a little salvation in the Shema, so that I am told, as we are told in Gemara Menachos Daf Tzadik Tes on the base, I think, that when you read the Shema, you should know that even if you didn't say another word of Torah, and you didn't even touch a sefer, that you have equivalently learned Kol HaTorah Kula. So we don't know. So it's a machlokas of poskim this afternoon. Do we put on tefillin and say the Shema, or do we put on tefillin and don't say the Shema?
If it's
available
in the morning, then
should you know that? But it's available all day. Torah is not allowed all day. Just like eating is not allowed all day. The only thing that changes at Chatzos at 101 at this point is, or only two things, is number one, you no longer have to sit on a low stool or on the floor. You can sit on a bench normally, because that's the beginning of the regeneration and the new growth. And you can start, you know, you can go to work if you have to, and start preparing to resume a normal lifestyle.
So what could you put on tefillin in the second part of the day? I mean, no pun intended, because supposedly your Vash is on that.
There.
Right there, right?
Yeah.
So what allows you then?
The Vilna Gaon and many others, by now, which is, I'm talking about what? 19 minutes after Chatzos, had tefillin on already for 18 minutes. You see? Already, I didn't say that they daven mincha yet. They may or may not have daven mincha, but tefillin they had on.
What changes in the afternoon?
Because from here on in, one-on-one was Chatzos today, there's going to be a slow recuperative process, even though the Beis HaMikdash is still burning. The intensive Avelus has reached its peak. From here on in, it's going to be a slowly but surely diminishing kind of a thing.
But it hasn't been lit yet. It was lit in the evening.
Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, if I were in the earlier generations, pre-Tanoim, in times of Nevi'im, I would have established that the whole Tisha B'Av be switched to the tent, not the night.
You would think that the intensity would really begin in the afternoon, that you would be allowed to wear tefillin in the morning, and then the intensity would be in the afternoon.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. Your dilemma is the dilemma of Rabbi Yochanan. Go do me something. It's an imperfect logical connection, but tafasta meruba lo tafasta. The zecher is the important part. The catharsis that you work through the avelus is the issue. Whether it's today or tomorrow is irrelevant. Try to become in time as perfectly precise as is humanly possible. But with the convergence of so many circumstances, there's going to be imperfect connections over here, all the way down the line. And you'll never be able to come up with a formula that will satisfy everything. Nonetheless, come Chatzos, and we're starting to wane. Already we're starting to wane.
We fasten like Rabbi Huda on the previous page. Rabbi Huda said that you can't learn something new that you haven't learned before. But he also mentioned, he doesn't say that you're allowed to learn halacha.
He doesn't say, the Brisas doesn't say, but it is an assumed thing, and Rishonim and Achronim write about it. It's surely Achronim.
Because it's interesting how he doesn't mention it, and the one before him did mention it.
So yeah, but at the beginning of the Brisa,
but
except for one thing, the beginning of the Brisa, Tanu Rabbonon, it says that Avelus is the equivalent of Tisha B'Av, and Tisha B'Av is the same as personal Avelus. Okay? Now, never is it assumed that things are different unless it is listed. Now, when you do list the things and you say you are not allowed to learn halachas, this and this and that and that, you have a problem. You can't give a full curriculum. But what you can do is derive or interpolate from what the curriculum is, you can derive certain ideas that may not be just black and white. You can read in between the lines. When you learn Hilchos Avelus, and you're not an Ovel, so you're learning it for ulterior motives. One is you may have to pass a Bechina in Yeridea, Hilchos Avelus. There's no tsar in that. There's only torture, but there's no grief in it. But when you learn it as an Ovel, the mere fact that you're learning that because you want to know your present circumstance in life conjures up the Avelus every single minute. Okay? As we are sitting here and learning the halachos of the 3 weeks, and Shavasa v'Tammuz, and the 9 days, and then the things that happened on Tisha B'Av, v'chule, is, and the halacha as opposed to minhag, is without question conjuring up the Avelus. It's within the realm of the Avelus. And if I were to learn it Erev Purim, instead of Tisha B'Av Day, our whole attitude would be different to it. Go to the Rambam. Let's take a look at the Rambam. 17. Did we have an executive committee meeting over here to decide when we'll call it quits? Maybe just we'll take a break right after this Rambam. Two tapes is like 3 hours worth. All right, we'll take a little break. Page 17. Yesham Yamim. there exists a category of days, Shekol Yisrael Misanim Bahem Mipnei Atzaros, Sheder Ubahem, that are fast days because all of the Tzaros that occurred. And the purpose of the fast, in all instances, is Kidei La'orer HaLevavos, to soften the hearts and awake them, Liftoach Darkei HaTshuva, to open up ways of tshuva. So that the tshuva process becomes a remembrance, a commemoration of what we did, ma'aseinu harayim, and also obviously ma'asei avoseinu, things that happened before us, shehoyok ma'aseinu, that are probably the models, the paradigms for what we are doing, ato, now, ad shegaram lahem velonu osan hatzoros, so that the tzoros ultimately resulted from our actions over a period of generations. Shebezichron devarim elu, by remembering these things, noshuv lahitiv, we can come back onto the road of good, sheneemar, as it is said, v'hisvadu es avonam, that at the point of tshuva, let them confess their sins, ve'es avon avosam, and the sins of their fathers. Now this pasuk is a very interesting thing. We don't say vidui today, by the way, but Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and other fast days, I meant Yom Kippur, and other fast days, we do say vidui. Hashamnu bagad, right before vidui in the Machzor, there is a statement, at least, that becomes problematic in one line. She'ein onu asefonim, elokeinu v'lokei avoseinu, right after Shema Kolenu, when we say slichas. Makolena, the Aron Kodesh is closed, and the Chazan begins, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu. Tovo lefanecho tfiloseinu, please accept our tfilos. Ba'al tisalei mitichinoseinu, don't turn away from our supplications. She'ein anu azei ponim, because we don't come to you with chutzpah, azus ponim, with arrogance. Loma lefanecho, saying to you, Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, tzadikim anachnu, whatever we did was right. V'lo chatanu, hey, we didn't sin before you. What are you punishing us like that? Avol anachnu v'avoseinu chatanu, we and our forefathers have sinned. The Birnbaum Matzer happens to have, and other versions also happen to have, avol anachnu chatanu, and leaves out avoseinu. Based on this pasuk, can you understand? V'hisvadu es avonom v'es avon avosom. You have got to go ahead and confess the sins that are nothing more, that may be nothing more than a continuation of the patterns of living of prior generations. And this is just being perpetuated. Now, on the other hand, the svara for those who say aval anachnu chatanu is because vidui is a very personalized kind of a thing. I exist alone before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, either as a tzaddik or as a rasha. I stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu with aloneness and separateness from all other people and all other generations. They may have been rishoyim, but I'll turn the tide and I'll become a tzaddik. How well we saw it. Chizkiyo HaMelech, the famous case. His father was a rasha, his grandfather was a rasha. And he turned back that time, the tide, and the hands of time, and became a tzaddik to the extent that his generation was ready to accept Mashiach, as we learned in Sanhedrin. But there are a couple of technicalities. There were problems over there. But he could have been Mashiach. No two ways about it. But from the Rambam, you see, in quoting it, it would seem that the Rambam's preference is to say in Slichus over there, right before Vidui, Aval anachnu v'avoseinu chatonu. Beis ve'elu heim. And here are the fast days. Number one, Yom Shlishi B'Tishrei, the third of Tishrei, Shebo Neherag Gedalia ben Achikam, that Gedalia ben Achikam, the Babylonian appointed governor of the remnants in Yerushalayim, was appointed to administer whatever community was left, V'nichbas Gevel Nachlas Yisrael, and whatever was left, Nachlas Yisrael HaNisheres, alright, Nichves, was burned, V'sibeiv La and ultimately it created a greater decimation of the community. It was the end, the total destruction. Vasiriba Teves, the next one is the 10th of Teves, Shabo Samach Melech Babel Nebuchadnezzar Horashal Yerushalayim, when the siege around Yerushalayim was laid by Nebuchadnezzar, the Heviyaba Matzor of Matzot, and it was a heavy siege. The third one was Yud Zayin Betamuz, Shivasa Betamuz, of which we learned that Chamishat Dvarim Ere Ubo, that five things occurred. Number one, Nishtabru Aluchos, the breaking of the Luchos. Number two, Batel Atamid Bibayis Rishon. In the first Beis HaMikdash, they couldn't bring the Korban Tomid anymore. Number three, Hukba'a Yerushalayim B'chuban Sheni, the walls were breached in the second Beis HaMikdash. Number four, the Saraf Apustamus HaRosha as HaTorah, again this public burning of a Torah that had an immense shock effect on generation, that generation, those who saw it, and others to follow. And number five, Ve'he'emid Tzelem B'hechol. Ve'he'emid means, and he erected a Tzelem, a statue B'hechol in the Beis HaMikdash. But you see that right after the Dalit of Ve'he'emid, you have an asterisk, and if you go down to the last line in the Rambam, not the last line on the page, before the Mefarshim, right near Lechem Mishnah, you see Nusach Acher, or Girsa Acheres, Gimel Aleph, Ve'hu'amad Tzelem B'hechol. Not necessarily that Apustamus put it there, but at some time on a Tisha B'Av day, there was in some era when a tzelem, when a pestle was put into the Beis HaMikdash itself. And we don't really know which it is. Rishalmi maybe attributes it to Menashe, at the times of Menashe in the first Beis HaMikdash. Halacha Gimel, the Tisha B'Av Chamishot Varim Eru Ubo. Five things occurred on Tisha B'Av. Number one, Nigzar al Yisrael b'amidbar shelo yikonsu la'aretz. Without question, you cannot go ahead and come into Eretz Yisrael if you were part of the Meraglim and if you were an adult who came out of Mitzrayim. Two, Charav habayis barishana. First Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Three, Bashniya. Third Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The fourth thing that happened on Tisha B'Av, and I want your attention now. V'nilkeda ir gedola. A gigantic city, fortress, was captured. U'betar shema. Its name is Betar. Now you want to know what significance Betar has, says the Rambam, v'hoyuba alafim v'rivavos mi'Yisrael. There were hundreds and thousands of Jews living there. They had a big king. I'll repeat that. All of Israel, and supported by Gedolei HaChachamim, the biggest of the Chachamim in that era, believe that the king of Betar was Melech HaMashiach. Whom are we talking about? V'nafal b'yad haromiyim. Ultimately, the city fell into the hands of the Romans. V'nehergu chulam. All were killed. V'hayisat tzara gedola. And the Rambam assures us that in the destruction of Betar, the tzara was as great, kemo churban beis hamikdash, as if the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash occurred. Bar Kochba, right? Yeah? Rambam was a Zionist, huh? Rambam believed that in the destruction of the state, the whole nature of Klal Yisrael was changed. Because if there was any hope to rebuild the third Beis HaMikdash and bring Mashiach, it was in the hope of the 2.5 years that Bar Kochba was able to root the Romans, get the legions out of there, and create an independent state to be able to mint coins and just take charge and control of their own future. A future not to be dictated ever again by a foreign power. You heard this Rambam before in other lines, in other words, in other places, in Hilchus Malachim. Those of you who joined us for Pesach, you heard my harangue on Pesach as far as this is concerned. This is a political statement of the Rambam that he infuses with halacha. I don't hear.
I don't notice that the commentary is saying anything.
What do you have to say? What's there to say? You see, the Mishnah and the Gemara that we just learned said Nilkida Betar. That Betar was right. Who is the commentary on that Mishnah Gemara? The Rambam is your commentator. He has the final word on it. When Rashi says something, or anyone says something, where it is clear, unequivocal, and the final word, what do you have to go and make Geschäft, and what do you have to make super commentaries for? He gives you the comments. So when you're learning the Rambam, you're not learning... Look, when you're learning this Rambam, if you didn't learn the Gemara before, do you see what you're missing?
Well, he's calling him Mashiach.
Yeah?
And he also talks in his...
But again, he understands Vidimu Kol Yisrael. What he is saying is that at that point they imagined that the way things were going, this was Mashiach. And as you well remember, after having learned for so many years that the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim, that Mashiach isn't an instant thing like you switch a switch on. Boom! Here you are, you light up my life, you're Mashiach. It is a process that has to unfold, and there are certain key stops, there are certain lighthouse moments in time that will give you a feeling, a sense that we're on the road to Mashiach, and the Aschalta, the Geula, we're in the process, we just have to let time and history unfold, and let's see where we get. You see, that's what he's saying in the words V'dimu Kol Yisrael. B'nai Yisrael were convinced that this was the Mashiach. And G'dolei HaChachomim, it wasn't just a mass movement, you know, a romantic kind of a thing of yearning for the better life. Chachomim substantiated this. And this is the Rambam's way of learning. How delicious it is when you realize that within his halacha he is giving you incredible insight and commentary into a Gemara, then that's why you have to learn the Gemara first and see what he does with the Gemara. And this is not the only place. It's one of the places where he gives you historical insight. In Birchas V'la Malshinim, also in Hilchas Tefila, he gives you incredible perush into the historical insight, into the concept of Anshei Knesset HaGedola writing a Siddur, which is Avodah Shebalev. He gives you incredible historical insight over there, but he does it on every page probably. That's why you have to see the Gemara. Now, the fifth one, Ubo Bayom, that same day, Hamuchan Lepuranus. Those are the two words you've got to hear. I've been saying it over again. Tisha B'Av is a day with a propensity for national tragedy. Bo Bayom, on that day, Hamuchan Lepuranus. For one reason or another, we get clobbered. Is Harash Tunis Rufus Harosha? Tunis Rufus went ahead. That's the Roman legion in the times of Hadrian. He went ahead and plowed the destroyed Beis Hamikdash and its area. Why? To be able to demonstrate that Sion Sodet Echaresh, of what the Novi said, that destruction and devastation will come to the Har Habayis in Yerushalayim as if it will be nothing more than a field that was just plowed. No civilization, no buildings, no Beis HaMikdash. You won't recognize the place. Total demolition. Total. No sign that this was Yerushalayim.
Why did it become so? Huh? Why did it become so?
It survived. It survived as a retaining wall. Because there was a hill there, the whole hill would have come down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you see, when he plowed the area, he was interested in making a Roman legal statement that this building called the Beis HaMikdash shall never again exist. Now, the Kotel was not a wall of the Beis HaMikdash itself. It was an outer wall, a retaining wall of the Har HaBayis. That's all it is. So it didn't have that intense symbolism of it being in need to be broken. But Rabbi Akiva, you went ahead and you wanted to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, and that's why you are fueling spiritually this revolution of Bal Kokhba. over my dead body, this place will be legally, according to Roman law, become a no trespass area. You'll never be able to build on it again. That was it. And in fact, nothing was built until the Muslims conquered it and then went ahead and built their mosques.
Wasn't there a church on there for a while?
Yeah, but not on the place, probably traditionally, where, you know, off to the side. Off to the side. Now, we'll take a breather, but I just want to tell you where I would like to go whenever you decide that you want to resume. I'd like to learn the Rambam. Aside from all the other restrictions, I'd like to speak about the restrictions of music. The restrictions of music in relationship to Avelis. We'll pick it up over there whenever you decide. Although the Rambam, the rest of the Rambam, you can find that what I'm talking about is on page 20 of the Rambam, Halacha Yud Dalet. By page 20, if you just take a look, just above in Halacha Yud Beis, on page 20, Halacha Yud Beis, which is the third line, the Rambam starts a whole list after having finished the specific restrictions.